Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song. Something you never seen before. So gather around, squeeze it tight, 'cause you're bound to hear a little truth tonight. 'Cause the love around here is bound to make it fall. Head over heels for heaven above.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Acts, where we've been following the Apostle Paul's arrival and arrest in Jerusalem. And now as we pick up in Acts chapter 22, verse 30, we'll be looking at the subjects of righteousness, self-control, and judgment as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So when we left the Apostle Paul, you remember he had gone up to Jerusalem, he had met with the elders, and he had given this great report on the many wonderful things that were happening among the Gentiles, and they were excited to hear the news, but they were concerned because there were rumors that Paul was not really supporting the Jewish perspective on the faith. And so they encouraged Paul to sort of put an end to those rumors by providing for these four young men who were going through a particular ceremony. And they felt that if Paul would do that, then that would indicate to everybody that those rumors that he was anti-Jewish would be squelched. And so Paul agreed to do that. And so he went into the temple toward the end of the purification period for those. And as he was there in the temple simply worshiping, certain Jews from Asia, where Paul had been ministering for those many years, they saw him in the temple, and they had previously seen Trophimus with him in the city, and so they assumed that Paul had brought a Gentile into the temple and had desecrated the place, and so they laid hold of him, and they called out for others, and they said, come and help us. This is the fellow we've been telling you about, the one that's causing all the trouble. And so a large group gathered, and they thrust Paul out of the temple precinct, and there they were. They were ready to basically just beat him to death. And as he was in harm's way, word came to the commander of the Roman precinct, and he sent his men, and they rescued Paul. They delivered him from this near-death experience. And as they were carrying him up the steps of the fortress, you remember the mob was still grabbing at him, trying to get him. They were still thirsty for his blood. And as they finally arrived there at the top, Paul asked for permission to speak to the people. And the captain was amazed. He said, do you speak Greek? Aren't you that Egyptian that led 4,000 assassins out into the wilderness? And Paul said, no, I'm a Hebrew. I'm from Cilicia, no mean city. And so the commander gave him permission to speak. And Paul then addressed this vast crowd of Jews, and the minute he began to speak to them in the Hebrew language, a great silence came upon the crowd, and Paul was able to basically share his testimony with them, something that he'd wanted to do for many, many years. That moment that he had prayed for, waited for, hoped would come, it finally came. And there was Paul, standing there on the steps of the Antonia Fortress, looking out over a crowd of thousands of Jews and sharing his testimony, how he could identify with them because he used to be just like them. But then he tells how Jesus met him and apprehended him on the road to Damascus, and he had their attention. They were captivated by this message that he was giving them. And as he went on in the story, he made a strategic blunder. When he happened to mention the Gentiles, he actually stated that the Lord had told him to get out of Jerusalem because they wouldn't receive his testimony, and that he was going to send Paul to the Gentiles. And when he mentioned that word Gentiles, all of a sudden they went back into a rage. They were once again foaming at the mouth. They were once again wanting to kill him. And so the soldiers took him into the barracks and they said, okay, take this guy and give him lashes so we can ascertain what it was that he said that got the crowd so worked up. And it was then that Paul revealed to them that he was a Roman citizen. He said, is it lawful to beat a Roman who's uncondemned? And suddenly they realized, oh no, they could be in trouble. This man is a Roman. If you were to give lashes to a Roman who hadn't been condemned, you could actually be imprisoned yourself. You could lose your position. You might even face execution. And so the captain says to Paul, he comes and he says, are you a Roman citizen? I heard that. And Paul said, yes, I am. And the man said, well, I purchased my citizenship with a large sum. Paul said, I was born a citizen. And so there, this man was inquiring about what it was that Paul said regarding this whole thing that had just blown up there. What was it that he said that got them so upset? And so as we come to verse 30 of chapter 22, it says, the next day, because he wanted to know for certain why he was accused by the Jews, he released him from his bonds and commanded the chief priest and all their council to appear and brought Paul down and set him before them. And so this is where we pick up. Now, Paul is here with this council as the commander is wanting to really get down to, you know, what is the issue here? Why are they so upset? Why are they trying to kill this fellow? What was it that he said on the steps when he was speaking in the Hebrew language? And so he puts them there before his accusers, basically. And then Paul, looking earnestly at the council, said, men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law, and do you command me to be struck contrary to the law? And those who stood by said, do you revile God's high priest? And then Paul said, I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak evil of the ruler of your people. So immediately Paul is in a hot situation once again as he's standing before this group of men, this council, the Sanhedrin, which he probably had been part of at one point in his life. There's no absolute certainty that he was part of it, but there are indications in Scripture that seem to imply that he was. And so he basically claims his innocence. He claims that he's done nothing wrong whatsoever, and this evidently enrages Ananias. And so he has Paul smitten. He has him struck. And then Paul responds to him. Now, we don't know the tone of voice in which Paul spoke. He might have simply said, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. But we don't really believe that, do we? When we read it, we feel like Paul says, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. What do you think you're doing? You know, and maybe he did. But you could understand it, especially from the human standpoint. Now, this guy Ananias, historically, he was an extremely wicked man. He was one of those who would constantly take advantage of the people financially. He had this whole scam going, this whole money-making racket going on there in the temple through which he was enriching himself. And he wasn't even above having at his disposal sort of, you know, thugs that would go around and extort from people and even kill people. He was so hated that he was eventually murdered by his own people, killed by his own people. He was killed by the Jews. So he was an extremely wicked man in this position. And so you can understand, Paul obviously probably, you know, knowing these things about him, speaks up and speaks out boldly against him. Now, in verse 5, many have been puzzled by the fact that Paul said that he did not know that this man was the high priest. And many have wondered, well, how could it be that Paul wouldn't have known that? And there have been a number of suggestions. Some have suggested that Ananias wasn't necessarily dressed in the priestly garments, so and because of sort of the, you know, tumultuous situation, it might not have been easily distinguished who was the high priest. Others have suggested that because Paul seems to have had a problem with his vision, that maybe he just couldn't see clearly enough to know who he was addressing. Others have suggested that Paul was being sarcastic here once again and saying, I didn't know that such a man as this could be God's high priest. And, you know, again, sort of referring to the character of this person. We really don't know why it was that Paul didn't recognize him. It might have been because he did have a problem with his vision, which he alludes to in other places in his writing. So, when Paul perceived, now here he is, he's in this room, he's meeting before the Senate of Israel, basically. But when he perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged. And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For Sadducees say that there is no resurrection and no angel or spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. Now, some people look at this and see this as sort of a sly trick on the part of Paul to sort of divert the attention off of himself and to get these guys in a battle with one another, which he did indeed do. But others see it as, you know, Paul is simply seeking to appeal to those in the group that he thinks he might be able to reason with. And that, of course, would be the Pharisees, because the Pharisees, although they had many problems, they were Bible believers. They were fundamental in their theology, where the Sadducees, on the other hand, were very liberal. They didn't believe in a resurrection, as it says here. They didn't believe in the afterlife. They pretty much believed just in, you know, life in this world, and then once you were gone, you were gone. So it seems to me that rather than, you know, just being ornery, Paul, you know, tries to get this argument going. I think Paul is genuinely wanting to appeal to the Pharisees because, of course, this was his goal, to get the gospel to these people. And because knowing how the people were so bound to the opinion of their leaders, Paul was persuaded that if he could convince them, the leaders, then of course this would have an impact on the people. And so he appeals to them based on the issue of the resurrection, knowing that the Pharisees believed in a resurrection. And so verse 9 says, then there arose a loud outcry, and the scribes of the Pharisees' party arose and protested, saying, we find no evil in this man. But if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. Remember some years earlier how Gamaliel, that leading rabbi of the day, how he stood up and gave similar counsel to the Jews back when they were harassing Peter and John and the other apostles. Now they're just sort of reiterating what Gamaliel had advised. Now, when there arose a great dissension, the commander, fearing lest Paul might be pulled to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force from among them and bring him into the barracks. But the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome. Remember, as we were wrapping things up in our last study, we were talking about how Paul would have no doubt felt dejected. He would have felt that he had failed because he seemed to have them right there, right where he wanted them. He had their attention. They were giving heed to what he was saying, but then he made that strategic blunder by mentioning the Gentiles. And no doubt he would have felt condemnation over that. He would have felt like he had failed. And perhaps even in this second opportunity, now before the leaders, he might have even felt that he didn't use the wisest strategy. We don't know what he was feeling, but I think because the Lord appeared to him and encouraged him, we can infer from that he was dejected, that he was downcast. But the Lord says, be of good cheer, Paul. The Lord is not disappointed with Paul's performance. The Lord didn't see it as a failure at all. And you know, that's something that I think we all need to realize. A lot of times we think that unless we lead somebody in the sinner's prayer, unless somebody responds positively to the message that we share with them, that somehow we failed. But testifying for the Lord, that's really all that we're responsible to do. In other words, we're responsible to speak as God gives us the opportunities, but the rest of it is really in God's hands. I can't make somebody believe in Jesus. I can't force somebody to make a decision. I can't go in and change the heart of a person. Only God can do that. And I have to realize that God holds me accountable for really one thing only, and that's just to take the opportunities he places before me to tell others about him, to share his truth. And then after that, I just have to trust that God, now it's up to you. But a lot of times I think we feel pressure that if we didn't close the deal, as some might say, that we somehow failed. Nobody got converted there at the base of the Antonia Fortress, and nobody got converted in the Sanhedrin, at least on these occasions. You never know what might have happened later. But it wasn't a failure. Jesus says to Paul, you testified for me, and just like you testified for me in Jerusalem, you're going to go to Rome, and you're going to do the same thing. Here's what we need to remember. We are, like Jesus was, we're to scatter the seed. And the seed's going to fall in various places. But the great news is that the life is in the seed itself. And as long as we do our part to just get it out to people, we can trust God to do the rest. And we need to trust him to do the rest. That's what the Lord requires of us, to take those opportunities and to testify as those occasions are made available to us. But from that point, the Lord takes it from there. And you never know what's going to happen down the road. When we used to do a lot of the street outreaches, I never felt compelled to force anybody to say a sinner's prayer with me or anything like that on the spot. I always was open to those kinds of opportunities developing if God should so lead in that direction, but yet sense that the Lord would, you know, he would make that clear if that's what we were to do. But we would go out and share the gospel and then just trust that the Lord is going to take these seeds that have now been scattered. And it might be a week from now. It might be 6 months from now. It might be a year from now, or 2 years, or 5 years. You see, we don't know. You see, the life is in the Word. And the most important thing is to get the seed out, to get the Word out. And as it goes out, as Jesus said, it falls upon various types of soil. But once it goes out, then the Lord takes it from there and he works with it. And so you never know, even though there wasn't an immediate positive response to his ministry in Jerusalem, you never know but what some that listened to him at the foot of the Antonia Fortress that day might have later on come to know Christ through his witness. But anyway, point being, Jesus didn't see it as a failure at all. Now, when it was day, some of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. You know, of course, the commandments, one of the commandments was, you shall not kill, you shall not commit murder. But here they are, you know, they're going to do this all for God. Now there were more than 40 who had formed this conspiracy. They came to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have bound ourselves under a great oath that we will eat nothing until we have killed Paul. Now you therefore, together with the council, suggest to the commander that he be brought down to you tomorrow as though you were going to make further inquiries concerning him, but we are ready to kill him before he comes." So when Paul's sister's son heard of their ambush, he went and entered the barracks and told Paul. Then Paul called one of the centurions to him and said, "Take this young man to the commander, for he has something to tell him." So he took him and brought him to the commander and said, "Paul the prisoner called me to him and asked me to bring you this young man. He has something to say to you." Then the commander took him by the hand, went aside, and asked privately, "What is it that you have to tell me?" And he said, "The Jews have agreed to ask that you bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire more fully about him. But do not yield to them, for more than 40 of them lie in wait for him, men who have bound themselves by an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him, and now they are ready, waiting for the promise from you." So the commander let the young man depart and commanded him, "Tell no one that you have revealed these things to me." It's interesting to me how this young man, however old he was, nobody really knows, but he's Paul's nephew. And how it would just happen to be that he would be in an area where he would overhear this plot. And then go to Paul and inform him and then be able to go to the commander. And through this whole thing, he's able to save Paul's life. And the thing that you see here is a truth that is important for us to remember. And it's a truth that Pastor Chuck has many times alluded to. But it's this, that God quite often works supernaturally in natural ways. See, a lot of times we're limited in our ability to see God at work because we're always looking for some, you know, radical supernatural manifestation. And because there isn't some big supernatural thing going on, we might say, well, you know, it doesn't seem like the Lord's really doing much. But yet when you step back and you look at all of the different things that are going on that could not be coincidental, people meeting and information being exchanged and, you know, arriving at a place at a certain time and all these kinds of things. Point being, we need to realize that God is at work much more so than we give him credit for a lot of times. And if we remember that God often works supernaturally through natural means, we'll be able to see the hand of God in a lot more things than we might see his hand in now. The Lord is usually working through this means. It's called sometimes providence, God working by providence, setting up circumstances, arranging situations, getting people in touch with other people and things like that. Having somebody at the right place at the right time, overhearing a conversation, or somebody actually having a conversation. You know, John Bunyan, the author of Pilgrim's Progress and many other books, he was just a rough and tumble guy. He was a rugged, you know, sort of a blacksmith, he was a tinker, but, you know, that was a person who worked with metal and things like that, sort of like a blacksmith. He got converted as he was sitting down for a meal and overheard three women conversing about the Lord and their relationship with the Lord. That's how his conversion took place. Whenever you're out in public somewhere, when you're mixing with other people who aren't believers, if you're with other believers, have conversations about the Lord. Just talk about the Lord. Talk about what God's doing in your life. Just talk to each other about it. You never know who might be listening. And you never know that God didn't set that situation up and bring those people your way just for that particular thing. That happens so many times. But a lot of times we don't realize it because, you know, again, we're looking for some big supernatural manifestation. But most of the time, God is working supernaturally through natural types of means.
We'll continue with more of our study of righteousness, self-control, and judgment in our next lesson, and we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Righteousness, Self-Control, and Judgment. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT-3138. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts and vodcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.